In our time, we have some kinds of forbidden music, which directly, provoke the people, sexually speaking.
Yes.
And I believe that no one can deny the effect of music in this regard. So if you want to control your sexual desires, before that, not only you may protect your eyes, you may also protect your ears too.
That's right.
And we have some notion in this regard too. And the next is to avoid provocative words. Again, teens, youth, when they are coming together, they spend time like telling jokes, which might have provocative words in them too. So if you want to protect yourself, sexually speaking, you need to take care of your words too. And that also shows the importance of the friends that you choose. So I think no one can
That's
deny
right.
the effect of the friends. It
Yes.
makes so much difference which type of friends you are associating
That's
with.
right.
And then for that, let me share one narration from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, that if you listen to a person, it is as if you have served him, meaning that you are a servant to him. So if that person, maybe your friend, talks about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Islamic values, it is as if you are worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If he talks about Satan and his words are satanic, it is as if you have served and worshipped the Satan. So the point is that we shouldn't take this point lightly, the people that we are associating with. No, this is one of the most important decisions in our life. They have direct connection to us and direct influence on us. And when it comes to sexual desires, it shows itself even more, explicitly. So it matters which type of friends we are choosing and we are associating with.
That's
These
right.
are some solutions. There are some more to it, which we may
Yes.
share in the following
For
session.
example, how to spend your energy, or it's better to say, for example, doing sports, which makes your body tired, and then you can have a nice sleep at night,
Definitely.
okay, to be away. Or there are some, as we can see, therapists who can help you through, we can't say, religious deeds or meditations in order to leave. Some of them are rooted in the Islamic teachings too, across the world. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh. It was
My
very kind of
pleasure.
you. And thank you very much to the listeners for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call-of-islam page. In another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
In Syria,
part 2.
In Syria, I couldn't look the way I wanted to at the passing of 9 years as I passed the streets, alleyways, and buildings. I could only keep myself composed to some extent, as opposed to many others who were in shock and awe when they encountered these scenes. Especially when I saw all of those factories and workshops that used to be full of workers, engineers, and technicians 9 years ago. People who are no longer in their workplaces. Many people who are no longer with us. There's not enough space in the ground to hide their bodies. Sometimes a park in the street becomes their burial place. I felt that in Syria, I didn't have the right to speak of anything other than the war for the past 9 years. However, I decided to at least look for answers to why all of this happened in Syria. Why Syria? In the United States, people are not very political. Therefore, it really doesn't matter to them what happens in the rest of the world.
CBS News came to this place called Attaf with General Frank McKenzie, commander of U.S. forces in the Middle East.
David, we're standing on the Damascus-Baghdad highway, just inside Syria, and what we're doing here is supporting our partners in the fight against ISIS.
However, not all the people here are American. Some members of Syria's opposition visit the TANF base regularly. Apart from their looks and uniforms, they can be recognized by their Arabic language and their Toyota vans. It appears they are opposed to the Syrian government and have come together to fight the Syrian army. But it appears that their main mission after protecting the American base is controlling the roads that pass through TANF. Of course, the Chinese, in cooperation with many other Asian countries, like Iran, intend to revive the Silk Road. This is a decision which is not secret, as they have talked about it openly on many occasions. Till then, the road linking Baghdad to Damascus, and from there to the Mediterranean coast, is still considered as the Silk Road. Wesley Clark is not the only person who believes the war in Syria was planned long before it started. Many others, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., also share this belief. He is the nephew of the former President of the United States. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is both a lawyer and author, published an article in 2016 in Politico magazine entitled "Why Arabs Don't Want Us in Syria." The article stunned many. He writes, "In their view, our war against Bashar Assad did not begin with the peaceful civil protests of the Arab Spring in 2011. In their view, our war against Bashar Assad did not begin with the peaceful civil protests of the Arab Spring in 2011. Instead, it began in 2000, when Qatar proposed to construct a $10 billion, 1,500-kilometer pipeline through Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, and Turkey. To see whether Kennedy's claims are true or false, we go back to the year 2000. As you are aware, Russia is the biggest producer and exporter of natural gas, with Europe being its biggest customer. The Russians export 70% of their produced natural gas to Europe. The US is highly motivated as it tries to find an alternative to Russia's gas. As a result, they have turned to Qatar and Azerbaijan for gas. But the fact is that Europe's demand for gas could not be met via sea only, and that such a huge supply could only be sent to the continent through a pipeline. This was where the notion of the Qatari gas pipeline was put forth. That's the same energy transit route that would pass through Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Syria, and then reach Europe via Turkish terminals. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. writes, "In Putin's view, the Qatar pipeline is a NATO plot to change the status quo, deprive Russia of its only foothold in the Middle East, strangle the Russian economy, and end Russian leverage in the European energy market." This plan faced a big obstacle, the Syrian government. Elsewhere in his article, Kennedy writes, "In 2009, Syrians announced that they would refuse to sign the agreement to allow the pipeline to run through Syria to protect the interests of their Russian allies. They also announced commissioning of Russian-approved Islamic pipeline with cooperation from Iran and Iraq. This Islamic pipeline would transport Iran's gas to the Mediterranean through Iraq and Syria, with its final destination being West and Southwestern Europe. The project would become a huge source of revenue for Syria and Iraq, as well as Iran." As a result, all the three countries insisted on its execution. Now, there were problems. On the one hand, Qatar's gas could not be transferred via Syria. On the other hand, Iran would gain a foothold in the European energy market. That's why they decided to remove the problem, namely the Syrian government.
This morning, President Obama called on Assad to step aside and announced the strongest set of sanctions to date targeting the Syrian government. These sanctions include the energy sector to increase pressure on the regime. The transition to democracy in Syria has begun, and it's time for Assad to get out of the way. As President Obama said this morning, no outside power can or should impose on this transition.
Cables released by the whistleblower organization WikiLeaks show that the Israeli, Saudi, and U.S. intelligence agencies started to give financial and intelligence assistance to the groups seeking to topple the Syrian government. This dates back to 2 years before the onset of protests in Syria. Regardless of the WikiLeaks cables, the most optimistic interpretation is that the 2011 protests over economic and political problems in Syria provided an opportunity to implement the Qatar gas pipeline to the Mediterranean by toppling the Assad government. Thus, the protests in Syria soon turned into a full-blown armed conflict, unlike Bahrain and Tunisia, where demonstrations remained peaceful. In a 2016 interview with an Italian news outlet, Bashar Assad explained the issue of the pipeline and the unfolding of the crisis in this way.
Many political analysts think the Syrian no to the pipeline routes proposed by Qatar may be one of the reasons why the war had begun in 2011. How important has been your no to Qatar in the beginning of the war?
It is one of the important factors, but it wasn't offered to us publicly. But I think it was planned. There was two routes crossing Syria. One of them is north-south, which is related to Qatar, as you just mentioned. And the other one was east-west to the Mediterranean, that crossed Iraq from Iran. And I don't think many countries who opposed the policy of Syria didn't want Syria to be a hub of power, of energy, whether electricity or oil, or even crossroads of railways and so on.
Later, in an interview with Russia Today, the WikiLeaks founder showed a cable that revealed Saudi Arabia and Qatar were providing military assistance to anti-government armed groups and even ISIS in Syria.
Early 2014 email from Hillary Clinton, so not so long after she left Secretary of State, to her campaign manager, John Podesta. That email, it states that ISIS, is funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, the governments of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Now, I think this is the most significant email in the whole collection. And perhaps because Saudi and Qatari money is spread all over the place, including into many media institutions. Under Hillary Clinton, and our Clinton emails reveal significant discussion about it, the largest ever arms deal in the world was made with Saudi Arabia, more than $80 billion.
And of course, the consequence of that is that this notorious terrorist group called ISIL or ISIS is created largely with money from the very people who are giving money to the Clinton Foundation.
It's a belief, but thanks to Trump, we can believe much of these stuff. Do you remember when Donald Trump described ISIS as a creation of Obama and Clinton during his 2016 presidential campaign?
He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. Okay? He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton. Co-founder, crooked Hillary Clinton.
Another person who can easily answer these questions is Qatar's former Prime Minister, Hamad bin Jassim.
There's even questions that have been raised about how much funding Qatar has done to some of the Islamic groups in Syria.
Look, in Syria, everybody did mistakes, including your country. When the war or the revolution happened in Syria, all of us worked through two operation rooms, one in Jordan and one in Turkey. The first one was in Jordan, and there was countries, some of the GCC countries, among them the Saudis, the Emiratis, Qatar, United States, and other allies. And they was working from there. And all of us, we was supporting the same group. In Turkey, we did the same. We discover by the time, you supported wrong group sometimes, sure. But you stop. It doesn't mean that we did not do something wrong there.
Whichever way you look at this story, the support of Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey of armed opposition forces in Syria is unequivocal. We should remember that in the US gas project, the Turks and the Saudis would also receive hefty transit duties for allowing the pipeline pass through their territories. The Qataris themselves have admitted this. When relations between Qatar and Saudi Arabia soured, and the Saudis put Qatar under economic and political pressure, Qatari officials tried to place the blame for what happened in Syria on Riyadh. They were not aware that they were admitting to their role in the Syria crisis too.
And at the beginning, and I say this publicly, the beginning, we have the green light from King Abdullah, late King Abdullah, that we lead and they will support us in this. And that was a discussion direct with Abdullah. And then they try to, later they want to change their opinion. They should inform us. We don't mind to be in the back seat and they
wanted
the
to
lead.
Take the lead?
Yeah, we don't mind they take the lead. They are the biggest, big country. We choose to be there because they don't want to appear in the beginning that they are, you know, completely involved.
was easy to change the regime first year.
Easy?
Easy, because there was no Russian completely involvement, no Iranian.
There were accusations that Qatar funded al-Nusra, which was linked to al-Qaeda. This happened, yes.
I don't think we have a relation with somebody which United States and all the other allies does not know about it.
In the midst of all this, leaders of some terrorist groups would make statements that would serve as a clue for smart people. Like this one. One of the most prominent propaganda leaders of Jabhat al-Nusra, who was critical of Saudi Arabia for sanctioning Qatar, believes the Qataris were among the biggest supporters of the Syrian opposition from the beginning. The story of the Silk Road and Qatar's pipeline project are not the only reasons for the war on Syria. Just look for US military bases in Syria other than Tanf. From the onset of the war in Syria, all US military bases other than Tanf were established in the country's north and northeast. At the time, the US set up the bases under the pretext of helping Syrian Kurds in the face of attacks by terrorist groups, especially ISIS. The Kurds were content with the US military bases and rejected help from the Syrian army. But in 2019, Trump suddenly announced he was withdrawing US forces from Syria. However, it was later revealed that the United States was not only planning to pull out their troops, but intended to beef up their military presence in places like Tanf.
But we are leaving soldiers to secure the oil. Now, we may have to fight for the oil. That's okay. Maybe somebody else wants the oil, in which case they have a hell of a fight. But there's massive amounts of oil, and we're securing it for a couple of reasons. Number one, it stops ISIS, because ISIS got tremendous wealth from that oil. We have taken it. It's secured. Number two, and again, somebody else may claim it, but either we'll negotiate a deal with whoever's claiming it, if we think it's fair, or we will militarily stop them very quickly. We have tremendous power in that part of the world. We have, you know, the airport is right nearby, a very big, very monstrous, very, very powerful airport and very expensive airport that was built years ago. We're in that Middle East now for $8 trillion. So we don't want to be...
Let's take a look at this map. Nearly all U.S. military bases are close to Syria's oil-rich areas. Trump justifies the U.S. encircling and extortion of these oil wells by claiming that the United States spent $8 trillion. During his presidency, Trump has frequently vowed to pull out U.S. forces from the Middle East, most particularly Syria. But in the same period, the U.S. has built six new bases in northeast Syria.
And one of the things that was brought out by the media, actually, and wisely and correctly brought out, we have very few boats going there anymore because we have our own oil and gas. We don't need it from the Middle East anymore. And that's why we're pursuing a future not only of energy independence, but not just words. You know, you've been hearing energy independence for years and years, and you'd hear it. We have real independence. But what we want now is not independence. We want American energy dominance. Dominance.
All this constitutes only part of the economic motive for Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United States to wage a war on Syria. Now the key question is, in light of all the proof, should we keep on thinking that the war in Syria is nothing but an ethno-religious conflict? Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Recently, French President Emmanuel Macron has expressed his dissatisfaction with the U.S. on multiple occasions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Global Times wrote, earlier this month, Macron criticized the U.S. for selling energy and gas to Europe at four times the price the U.S. sells to its own industry. Macron said, that is not exactly the meaning of friendship. He then reminded U.S. President Joe Biden to speak with prudence when commenting on the risk of nuclear conflict. During a press conference following the just-concluded EU summit in Brussels, Macron again called out U.S. double standards over selling gas to Europe at prices 3 to 4 times higher than it is sold in U.S. domestic markets. TFI Global, an India-based media outlet, published an article on October 18th entitled Forget U.S.-Russia, a Cold War is underway between France and the U.S. While the West is trying hard to portray its unity amid the Russia-Ukraine crisis, France is apparently not safeguarding the U.S. prestige. This exposes deep contradictions in the transatlantic relationship. On the one hand, the practical interests of Europe and the U.S. are in growing conflict. Due to the Russia-Ukraine crisis, global energy prices are rising sharply. Costly energy imports have pushed the Eurozone into growing trade deficit. Worse, the U.S. Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates, bringing huge pressure to the European Central Bank when it comes to policy adjustment. The euro has fallen below parity with the dollar, dividing to its lowest level in 20 years and ending a 1-to-1 exchange rate with the U.S. currency. On the other hand, the strategic goals of the EU and the US are not the same. The US is ganging up with its allies to safeguard its hegemony. This is not the ambition of the EU. The latter wishes to shape its foreign policy based on its own interest, rather than being forced to take sides in major power competition. This is the main driving force for Macron to stress Europe's strategic autonomy time and again. However, as the Ukraine conflict drags on, Europe is propelled to increase its reliance on the US-led NATO and has to sacrifice its economic interest in exchange for security guarantees. Europe seems to have no alternative but to allow the US to continuously impose the cost of Ukraine-Russia crisis onto itself, and its own strategic autonomy has been greatly jeopardized. In particular, the US is relentlessly provoking the escalation of the Ukraine crisis, which has not only weakened Russia but also strengthened the US control over Europe. This has put Europe in greater economic difficulties as well as on the brink of a more dangerous war. Behind Macron's warning to the US, there are not only great worries about the intensification of future crises, but also helplessness that he cannot control the destiny of France, as well as a strong call for Europe to strengthen unity. Of course, France has its own reasons for playing the role as an anti-US fighter. France has a tradition of great power autonomy. It always has a global perspective, the importance of which cannot be overlooked. Former French President Charles de Gaulle had advocated France should adhere to an independent foreign policy and should not be completely constrained by the Western camp led by the US. For this reason, France once decided to withdraw from NATO's integrated military command, and it became the first Western major power to establish diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China. Moreover, France has been an advocate for European integration. The rise of Germany's strengths, as well as the European debt crisis, once gave Germany the chance to lead Europe. After former German Chancellor Angela Merkel left politics, it gave France the opportunity to try to dominate European internal and foreign policies. In addition, Macron has his own political needs to take care of. Macron has regarded the revival of France as his own responsibility, promoting reforms internally and striving for France's status as a great power externally. In this year's presidential election, he was re-elected, but failed to gain an absolute advantage in the parliament. The domestic reform agenda was limited by the obstruction of the opposition. Therefore, Macron needs to make some breakthroughs in European integration and other diplomatic issues in order to strengthen his rule. The contradiction between France and the US, or between Europe and the US, is more of a contradiction in the Western camp and the result of uneven distribution of power and interest. However, France's disappointment toward the US has a limited impact. It will not change the dominant subordinate structure between the US and Europe, nor will it deal a fundamental blow to the hegemonic system of the US. It is impossible for France to give up the institutional dividends of the West either. But Macron's dissatisfaction toward the US will more or less bring some variables to transatlantic relations. For example, when the US-EU Trade Technology Council TTC meeting is held in September, the two sides will find it more difficult to coordinate with each other. In addition, when Europe and the US have a trade conflict in the field of electric vehicles, Germany will definitely stand on the side of France. It means the deepening differences between France and Germany will be breached, and Europe will form a tougher stance towards the US. The issues that seem to be problems only between the US and Europe could also add uncertainties to the current increasingly complex relationship among more major powers. According to Bloomberg, Macron said U.S. trade and energy policies has created a double standard, and Europe was left paying higher prices for its natural gas, according to a report by oilprice.com. The comments from Macron come following 2 weeks of protest staged by workers in French oil refineries Total Energies and ExxonMobil. France was the latest country to withdraw from the Energy Charter Treaty, ECT. It has now switched to being a net importer of energy from once being a net exporter of energy. There are strikes reported at EDF's nuclear reactors as well. Macron is unhappy with the price it is paying for the liquefied natural gas LNG France is importing from the U.S. It turned to the U.S. for LNG to make up for its declining nuclear fleet and also for the total halt of the Russian energy supplies. Bloomberg added the oilprice.com report revealed that U.S. natural gas exports to France increased 421% during the first 8 months of 2022. But LNG prices are soaring and increased by 1,094% in August alone. In Brussels, Macron said that the North American economy is making choices for the sake of attractiveness, which creates a double standard. He pointed out that at home, the U.S. enjoys low energy prices, but exports energy at higher prices. He also pointed out that state aid for some sectors goes up to 80%, while state aid is prohibited under the Treaty on the Functioning of the EU, TFEU. Macron earlier this week referred to both the U.S. and Norway and said some nations are reaping the real super profits from geopolitical war on earned income. Macron's recent comments also reflect the troubles that are arising between France and the U.S. The ties are strained over the AUKUS deal, where the U.S., the U.K. and Australia formed a grouping, and the U.S. said it would provide Australia with 8 conventionally armed but nuclear-powered submarines. Australia earlier had a pact with France with respect to nuclear-powered submarines. Macron is expected to visit the United States in December and will take up the subject of energy with his American counterpart, Joe Biden.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers of your questions are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University and researcher in the Hausa Ilvia of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, Professor Nakavina, in our previous episodes, we are talking about the things that a mother or parent or a father or a trainer needs to keep in mind while they are developing a child physically. That is the nutritional things they have to keep in mind. They have to keep in mind the exercise part. They have to keep in mind how much a child walks in a day, or even if it's a very small child. And then you said about the junk foods. We talked about fast foods, how they affect the development. Is there anything else you would like to add to physical development?
I mean, as I said, proper food, proper way to eat it, the etiquettes that we have in eating, the general etiquettes that Islam tells us, or generally also we know a lot of things that have to be taken care of, washing our hands before that, and all of these things are important. What is more important is that they should, I mean, when you start eating, and then again, if you remember that we mentioned that, why are we eating? The child should know that this eating or anything which we are benefiting from the material resources in this world is for a higher purpose.
All right.
That worldview has to be inculcated, imbibed in the child. That why am I doing exercise, or it is eating, or it is resting, is for the sake of my physical development. So through that physical development, I am able to develop my spiritual self, my mental and emotional and intellectual faculties are developed. So I become spiritually aligned with the purpose of my creation with the Lord.
So that why should always be there, why I'm doing this and how I have to do
exactly.
this.
Exactly, and always be thinking on these lines is very important. Even when we talk about sports, I mean, our children, whether girls or boys, they should be involved in certain sports, healthy sports, which give them relief and leisure time to think or to make them relax.
Or actually release that negative energy.
Exactly. I mean, today, in the day of the internet, and I don't know what's going to come to us when we go for the metaverse.
Yeah.
There's something very, very...
The life has already become a sedentary kind of life.
Everything is going to be in the virtual world.
Yeah.
And we're going to be completely removed from the physical aspects of this world, which are very important. Our continuous interaction with this physical world is important in our physical development, and thereby our spiritual development. So every child should be groomed in such a way that he or she takes up a certain, at least one or two sports which are necessary for them to release their energies, to become relaxed. Not as professional people, not as a profession, as a way of having leisure and having fun and enjoying our lives.
Yeah.
Sports which are, of course, in harmony with the physical aspects, whether as far as being a masculine or a feminine gender, or as far as my physique is concerned.
All right.
There should be sports activities which develop my physical faculties and also my mental faculties. And they relax me, give me relaxation in my minds, in my mind, in my feelings.
All right.
And well, also develops me for the sake of increasing my proximity to Allah Almighty and my productivity in that line.
Direction. All right. We'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Professor Nakavi. We're discussing what things parents should be keeping in mind while they are developing their child physically, Professor Naqvi, you said that sports are really important. They relieve us. It takes out the negative energy. And don't you think the things that we discussed that were important with the physical development, that we have to actually reduce our screen time and do a more lot of interaction with the environment for our physical development. Don't you think this physical development, while we are working on this, it automatically increases our cognitive development as well?
Yes, there are many sports which help that cognitive development, of course. Because any physical exercise involves all our faculties together, especially our emotions. And there are certain games which are mind games, like for chess or other things. Of course, again, there are indoor games. Indoor games are good for mental development, but outdoor games like swimming, archery, horse riding, even self-defense techniques, which are very important today.
All right.
We need to develop these things. I mean, when we talk about defense or self-defense, it is religiously necessary for us to be able to ward off the enemy, to defend ourselves.
Yes.
So even self-defense techniques may have to be learned by even women, not just men.
All right, yeah. And actually, you remind me of the beautiful lines from Ayatollah Khamenei, which are posted in our gym. We have a women's gym over here, and it's written in each and every corner over there that how important it is for women to do exercise, because women are also a part of the population and they contribute a lot. They compose a lot of percentage of this population. Well, what else should we be...
A child, for example, especially when you're talking about the girls and women, their physical development, physical maintenance of their health is very important in their being good wives and good mothers.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to have that energy. Also, whether it's taking care of their husbands and the responsibilities which they have towards their husbands. So that physical development is very important.
Yes.
Apart from the mental and cognitive things and emotions, physical strength and physical perseverance is very important for us, especially for girls and women. And therefore, sports and many things which are necessary for that physical development are necessary. There's no doubt about it.
I actually met a girl in the gym, and she said she was 16 years old and she was not married yet. And she was saying, I am here basically to get ready for my marriage. I said, how? How could gymming help that? And she was like, my parents tell me you should not be complaining to your husband tomorrow that I have backache, I have this ache, I have this and that. So you should not be complaining. So in order to keep her from those complaints, they're sending her gym to develop physically. Well, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, teach your children swimming and archery.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm with Professor Naqvi, and we are discussing the things that parents or educators should be keeping in mind while they're developing their children physically. Yes, Professor, do we have something else to add in physical development?
Physical, as I said, it has many aspects, and every aspect plays a role in certain specific fields, if we get time to think of the realms and the domains of our behavior where this mental and physical development is going to be useful for that aspect of life, as we just mentioned that this physical development of a girl is very important for her in her married life.
Yeah.
So till she becomes ready for that, she has to take care of these things,
yeah,
which are physical, her physical physique and her health are very important in making her husband attached to her.
Exactly.
So that is very important. That should be one of the things that for the family relationship, which is necessary for the future.
All right.
And then, of course, many things can be mentioned in the physical issues. But the most important thing, the connection between the cognition and the physical development, is through the attitude and the emotions that are required.
All right.
So we need to, as we mentioned before, there are two things, two major factors in our emotions, two aspects or two faculties. One is the faculty of, according to the traditional school of thought, that we have on the one hand anger, and on the other hand we have temptations and desires. These have to be balanced.
Yeah.
And they have to be brought under the control of the intellect, the rational thinking, logical thinking that we have. Through that we need to control them. And then these emotions have to be made, channelized towards those activities which are proper.
Yeah.
And so this is the axis between the cognition and the physical activities that we have to carry out in our everyday lives. So emotions have to be managed, that we can control our emotions and feelings and do things which we want our children to do. We make them feel, when they become angry, we should make them control their anger. They go after something which they, for example, desire too much, we need to control that. For example, you feel that your child wants to eat something, make him sit him down and give him some time and think over what he wants. Discuss it with him. Discuss this with her. Oh, you just want to go and open the refrigerator and eat anything that you get a hand on? No, that's not the way.
Well, that's also coming in the emotional development, and inshallah we'll discuss emotional development in another episode. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our programs again, please go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. If you have any questions, any suggestions, any comments for our program, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also search us on our social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. And when you go to our official website, parstoday.com, you'll find a tab, Call of Islam. Over there, you can find our programs. Until another session, fi amanullah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.